everybody, and welcome to the Shut Up and Sit Down board game podcast that is all about board games and is affiliated with the YouTube channel Shut Up and Sit Down, put out by Shut Up and Sit Down Incorporated. My name is Quentin Smith, and I like board games, and I'm here with Tom Brewster. Tom, do you still like board games?
I have a good relationship with board games at this point.
I mean, maintaining any relationship is a challenge, but board games are in many ways the perfect spouse because they are...
Cardboard, yes. Yeah,
that's what I was going to say. Tom and I have an interesting episode coming up for you today because we just released a video that was kind of a manic task. We decided we were going to review 10 small board games in one video, and... I don't know, Tom. This really, when we first pitched and agreed to do this idea, which has just gone up on our YouTube channel, you can go and watch me and Tom clowning around reviewing 10 games. I thought it would be easy to do. Turns out when you sit down to write a script that involves explaining and then rating 10 games, oh boy, it's bad.
You know, one thing
I can say that now, the project is over. It was a bad project and I hated it.
One thing we didn't do in the video was actually, you know, you alluded to ranking the 10 games. We didn't put them in any kind of order. Maybe we could do that at the end of this podcast, or is that too cruel?
No, that's not a bad idea. That's a nice little teaser. They are all good.
They are all really good.
We chose 10 games that we really like, and this podcast is kind of an addendum to that video.
A companion
piece. This podcast, I like that. It's a longer, sloppier, more conversational opportunity. A worse piece of content in which we will just chat about some things with the 10 games that, because when you're reviewing 10 games in one video, you can't afford to spend much time on them. Just a slim page of a script on each game.
Yes.
So this is where we will place the errata, aka additional thoughts we had on those 10 games.
We can luxuriate in the minutiae.
We can.
Come, you know where listener, wallow with us.
You know where I'm going right after this podcast, Tom?
Where?
I'm going to Gatwick Airport in the UK. Do you know where I'm flying to?
America.
That's right. I'm flying to New York. Then do you know where I'm flying to?
Ohio?
That's correct. Yeah, I'm going to Cleveland and I'm going to be attending CabinCon. It's going to be kind of a secret because by the time this podcast comes out, I will be at CabinCon. But... the attendees of CabinCon don't know I'm coming because I kind of wanted to go under the radar. I'm not really going on company business. I just heard it's a really great convention. It's a convention that takes place in an American summer camp, mm-hmm. You know, where like parents bundle their children off so they don't have to deal with them for 2 months. So I'm sleeping in a bunk bed,
yeah,
in a co-ed bunk bed with a bunch of board gamers who almost certainly know me from the internet and do not know that this D-list celebrity is coming to share and a room with them and sleep in the same room with them.
You didn't know that Shut Up and Sit Down actually decided universally that we would send you to CabinCon, because in this circumstance, we are the parents sending our idiot child to get out of our hair for a bit.
It is a bit like that, isn't it? None of you have to deal with me for at least a week solid.
Woo-hoo!
I'm excited.
Yeah, I hope you have a nice time. I'm sad I'm not going.
Well, I have heard that Alan Girding, designer of Two Rooms and a Boom, has a prototype which involves turning a bunch of people and cards into a haunted house.
Oh my God.
Through nothing more than telling people to do spooky things. So you can expect my podcast returning from CabinCon in a couple of weeks.
I'm excited to talk about Girding's Game Gulag.
You cannot... Oh, I'm so glad. This podcast comes out while I'm at CabinCon. There's a chart, like Alan Girding is going to be very upset that Girding's Game Gulag is going to... You may just have accidentally renamed the convention. That is kind of too good.
Before we get rolling on this, I should actually give the listeners the list of games that we're talking about, because some people might not have seen the video and they might need to know what games we're going to talk about on this podcast. So... in a brief moment, we're going to talk about Spots. And then after that, we're going to talk about For Sale. We're going to talk about Hungry Monkey. We're going to talk about World Breakers. We're going to talk about Aquamarine and Voyages. And we're going to talk about Trailblazers. That's the list of games on this podcast. I'm doing the admin here. Let's start with Spots, shall we?
Let's do it. If people at home have realized that's not 10 games, that's correct. There are other games in the video. We've got to keep a little something back.
We've got to keep a little something back. And because we've sort of covered those games elsewhere, or will cover those games elsewhere in a different podcast, maybe. Listen.
We have a system. It kind of works. Tom, would you like to talk about Spots?
Okay, so Spots is a fantastic little push-your-luck game from CMYK Games. They made Monikers, they made Wavelength. Now they made a little game where you roll dice. I really love the manual for this game. It says, dogs have spots, dice have spots, put the spots on the dogs. And that's what you do for the whole game. What you'll see in front of you immediately is you'll see two little dog cards that have spaces for dice to go on that match the spots on the dogs. You will have a little kennel, or the yard as it's called, where you'll maybe have a dice and a bone. In front of you, you have six possible actions that you can take on your turn. And all you do on your turn is choose one of the actions to take and then take it. And each of those actions will involve rolling the dice in some way and putting matching dice on your dogs. For example, you might roll two dice, you roll a five and a four, and the five matches a spot on your dog, so you put the five on there. But what about the four? It doesn't match. It goes into your yard, a little box where all the bad dice go. If the yard ever goes over seven total pips, so as soon as it hits eight pips, you're done. You're finished. Your dogs are bad. And you wipe off all of the dice from the kennel, and you wipe off all of the dice from the dogs, and you have to start from scratch. Any dogs that you've previously filled, because the objective is to fill up a dog with dice. You want to have all the spots. Yeah, as you said, as you chuckled about in the episode as well. You have to fill up a dog with dice. Once you have filled in all the spots, you can then take a turn to score that dog, flipping it over and making it a permanent point towards winning. 6 points, and you've won the game. However, the push your luck magic in this game is that if you fill up all of your dogs, let's say you had three dogs in front of you that had like maybe 10 total spaces for dice between them. If you manage to fill up all of those dogs, all those spots, you flip them all over at once without taking an action, which is like huge in a game where you might take like 12 actions. No, not 12 actions, like 20 actions total. Not having to spend one just flipping over a dog is kind of huge. Quinns, I really like this game. It's very good. It's very sharp. It's very fun. I seem to remember there's a bit of when I'm filming the beer on the video, or when I'm filming my lines, you said, oh, the cogs are turning. This seems fun.
Yes, that's true. I did not like how this game looked at all, and I was very rude about it, but only because I knew that it was probably actually good if you were talking about it. there's not that many games that just let you kind of gamble with dice, are there? Like, board games are so good at, you know, like using dice for conflict resolution or for, you know, like randomizing a result. But the history of dice is, you know, it's craps. It's, you know, it's God, a million other dice games that used to be played in pubs before the 1950s. Mm. And board games as a hobby have kind of gotten away from this idea of just rolling the bones and gambling. And it really sounds like Spots is filling that niche.
I think it's filling the niche because it has just the right amount of inviting push your luck in it. It's not such a massive bonus that like you're always going to want to do it. But when you want to go for it, it's just like, it's got that brain itch at the back of your head that goes, oh, you could do it. And that ties into the way that you roll the dice. These actions that you have are all named after a thing that a dog does in these sort of like subtle but thematic ways. So for example, walk is one of the things you can do. You roll two dice and then you roll one dice and that's it. That's like not much risk. It's sort of ambling and simple. Another option might be to chase, where you roll one dice, then you roll two dice, then you roll three dice, then four, then five, and you can keep doing that as many times as you want, which is like Ava correctly pointed out, that it feels like you are a dog chasing something, continually sort of getting more and more driven towards a singular goal, no matter how much risk it may incur. I don't think dogs talk about risk that much. And then sprinting is you roll one dice for each of your cards with an unfilled space and then repeat that as many times as you want. So obviously you're just taking on more and more and more and more and more risk, but it's so inviting to do so. So many actions are roll this and then repeat and then in like almost in bold as many times as you want, which is great. Also, something that we neglected to point out on in the video, or that I neglected to point out in the video, this game's designed by John Perry. Who's the same guy?
Oh, the guy who did Air, Land, and Sea.
Yes. And also, I was worked with like Derek Yu on things like UFO 50 and Eternal Daughter, which is cool.
This is like, CMYK Games do seem to be approaching that status of a publisher who not just reliably puts out good games, but puts out different good games. Uh-huh. Which seem to, that's like the two best things a publisher can do.
It's a little bit scary. Like, you know, Monikers and Wavelength fit in quite a similar category. And then they came out with The Fuzzies, which is completely bizarre, but still does kind of, I think that all of their games do have something about, they're all very simple, they're very approachable, and they're very stylish. And I think that's something nice about having these differences in, I mean, I think Spots is stylish. You think differently, but I think that having this through line with all of their games being like ultimately approachable and like kind of poppy is like really good, even though there's lots of difference of the kind of games that they put within that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, wow, what a terrific publisher, just going from strength to strength. From you talking about hot new games, I just wanted to briefly talk about For Sale, because we finally covered it. It absolutely breaking the rule of the top 10 new small games video. I just bunged in a game that was not new at all, but because we've failed to cover For Sale for years, and I was like, I just saw an opportunity and wedged it in, like, I was like, you know, Indiana Jones rolling under a big stone closing door. For Sale's great, and it's from quite literally before Tom was born, but it's been kept in print since then because it's phenomenal. It's a game of buying and selling houses. It's a game of two halves, where in the first half, players auction off different houses, which range from literally like a sewer with a string of fairy lights running down into it to, you know, a space station, which is the best house. And then what you're really doing in this first half of the game is assembling a hand of cards for the second half. All these houses you buy that are, you know, sat in front of you like a little tableau, you then pick up and you use them to bid for checks in a slightly different auction, and you sell those houses and you get checks and you've got a total amount of money. And it's just great. Tom, I reviewed For Sale in this video, but you also love For Sale, is that right?
I do. I do like For Sale a lot. And you know, one of the things that's kind of funny about this game is that you say it's been sort of kicked around the site for so long as this game that, like, we always want to review, always want to cover, because it's always good. It's evergreen. It's like a really good, like, solid game to have in your collection. Is that so? You gave this to me. I don't know if you remember this. When I started working for Shut Up and Sit Down, you gave me a little bundle of games, basically going like, maybe you can go away and cover these. And For Sale was one of them. And I think that it was less of a job and more of a test to identify if For Sale is truly the game that you think it is. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I didn't tell you it was legendary. No. I just gave you this like classic game from 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, I think, wow,
it was bundled.
I didn't.
It was bundled with a few other games that like are certifiably are not classics.
Wow. That was an accidentally cruel thing for me to do. Yeah, I'm so sorry. And I'm extra sorry because it's really simple card games, it's often very difficult to identify that they are great. You know what I mean? Like a game like For Sale or No Thanks, like there's nothing immediately flashy. There's no rule that you teach and everyone goes, you know, there's no fantastic theme. It's just when you're playing it, you're just having a really good time and it's generating mistakes that are really funny. We had an interesting conversation about No Thanks recently where I think the game in No Thanks is almost too thin for me.
Right.
And you said, maybe correctly, that I was kind of missing the point. The point of No Thanks is that every single turn anyone takes, the whole table goes, and For Sale for me is that it kind of takes up that small classic slot in my collection where you're still auctioning, players are still going, but you know, there's just fractionally more game, which is to say I can reliably win For Sale. I cannot reliably win No Thanks.
It's very similar to No Thanks, the more that I think about it, to be fair. Like it has that same thing of like, it's about who sort of like chickens out first in a lot of ways. It's kind of like an inverse of No Thanks in a way that's really quite clever. And I do think that like For Sale also generates, you know, generating mistakes is a phrase you've used a lot when talking about that game. And it's 100% true that like it is a game about agonizing over the fact that you spent so much money on a mansion and now got as much as someone else did for their like pig pen from it. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Delightful.
You mean
game.
When they're selling it? Yeah. Of accidentally selling your pig pen for $15 million and accidentally buying an igloo for $40 million. Yeah, it's great. Covering For Sale for the video has also made me really want to try For Sale Autorama by Eagle Griffin Games, which I just saw before this podcast, is actually designed by Stefan Dora, the original designer of For Sale.
Oh, lovely.
So For Sale is a game of two halves. For Sale Autorama is an effort to turn it into a game of kind of three halves, where you first bid on experts. It's themed around buying and selling cars. But before you start buying and selling cars, you buy experts who know certain things about certain cars. So I'm interested to try that. And also, Tom, Stefan Dora's... I also found out that Stefan Dora designs Medina, which is a game I really, really like.
Oh, yeah.
I both like it more and I'm better at than anyone else on Shut Up and Sit Down. But Tom, did you know Stefan Dora also has a bunch of fantastically named games? If you were a designer, I think you would name your games the same as Stefan Dora's back catalogue. Can I name a few of these for you?
Hit me.
Slough Off.
Uh-huh.
Bucket King. Niet, which is just Russian for no. And Marrakesh, which is what if you were in Marrakesh trying to get cash?
I see.
It's just, it's like, It really is like he finished the game and then realized it was going to print in 11 minutes and had to name it like immediately.
Bucket King is great.
I'm here to try Slough Off, I'll tell you that.
Another card game that is very different from For Sale that we talked about on our Top 10 Small Games video is World Breakers, Advent of the Carnate, which is a two-player head-to-head card-based battling game. And you did hit the nail on the head, Quinns, when you talked about in the video, you said that we cover lots of these games, or we have played lots of these two-player head-to-head games. And it's actually kind of a shame that we didn't get to talk about World Breakers in our CCG special, although World Breakers is not really pitching to be a CCG, but it would have fit right alongside chats about Flesh and Blood and Soulforge Fusion as being a kind of twist on this like head-to-head Magic the Gathering style format. Although I think that World Breakers has a really lovely push and pull that is kind of more aligned with Netrunner than it necessarily is with games like Soulforge and Flesh and Blood. Although invoking the name Netrunner brings up a lot of assumptions and ideas about what a game is and how it feels. It's just a light sprinkling of that. It's not sort of as core as, you know, you're not like hacking. You're not you're not in Defar Future and you're not keeping like massive secrets from one another.
No, you're in 13th century alternate history Asia. And what do we always say, Tom? We always say for the theme of your board game, you should pick something that you care about and can cover with real specificity. Rather than something generic. And yes, it really feels like the designer of World Breakers, Ellie Amir, really cares about 13th century Asia. And that comes through the game. And I'm here for it. I'm happy to play Marco Polo trying to get crystals from a weird, like, magical spellcasting descendant of Genghis Khan. Let's talk a little bit about that structure, because it's a little bit Netrunner, a little bit Magic the Gathering, because what you've got is, in the same way in Magic, you play lands. In World Breakers, you buy kind of areas, like, I don't know, a crystal cavern that you're mining for crystals. And then they kind of tick off over several turns, mm-hmm. right? At the end of each turn, you get first off the level one reward from it, then the level two, then the level three. But if your opponent can punch through your defenses or make you not want to block with your units, they can destroy that resource. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. And you have, so the way that you win the game of World Breakers is just by accruing enough power. And power is something that you can either get a little drip of from those like locations that you play down in front of you, or you can do it just by fighting. And there's something really nice about the fact that the first two decks is something that I love in games. When the first two decks that it gives you are fantastically well balanced against each other. You have one deck that's all about building up a sort of blockades, defenses, kind of keeping their like, their power close to their chest and relying on that drip income. And then another faction that doesn't really play many locations, but instead just goes to town trying to get through the other person's defenses, which creates this like lovely asymmetry off the bat, which then changes when you introduce the different decks that the game also comes with. There's four factions in the base game. And I also wanted to touch upon the fact that we talked about in that CCG special, we talked about Flesh and Blood, and we talked about Soulforge Fusion, the difficulty of learning these games and how they can be really knotty and irritating to learn because they just have like lots of, I don't know, like neither of those games were a particularly inviting learning or teaching experience. I think that's correct.
No, they weren't. Yeah, but World Breakers, you taught it to me and then we didn't really have to reference the manual for the entire time we were playing, which was huge.
Yeah, or if we did have to reference something, it was on the back of the manual in the most clear player guide I have seen in one of these games, like ever. All the keywords do exactly what you expect them to do. Like every time we had a rules question, you looked it up just to be sure, but then we were like, oh yeah, that works how I think it works. Like, delightful.
Yeah, that's such a huge deal. Twist ending though. You and I really like World Breakers. We were really impressed. It's like a new designer. You know, it's an interesting idea. It's really, really solid. And that's, none of that is that impressive, but take it from us that it's very rare with these kinds of games. however, while you and I agreed to record this segment talking about World Breakers and we were going to be picking it up, twist ending, do you know what all this discussion of, you know, collectible games where you deploy units and run them around and try and smash your opponent's resources, do you know what this has made me want to play?
What's it made you want to play, Quinns?
Summoner Wars 2nd Edition. That game is so good.
That game is
so
really good.
I'd kind of briefly forgotten about it, but my goodness, it's like the best in class of these, you know, spend resources to deploy units, run your units over and try and smash the other team. It's so asymmetric. And it was you saying, I love when a set has two different decks that are perfectly balanced against each other. As soon as you said that, one of my seven brain neurons fired, the one that has Summoner Wars written over it. And I was like, oh my God, I really want to play some Summoner Wars.
It is really good. It's the presence of that board in Summoner Wars, like the fact that there's a physical space that you occupy that's kind of it roots it in a tactility or a physical space that you can
Yes, and it's like, it's what if Magic the Gathering, but you could chase the opponent's magician into a corner and then have them like erect walls and physically cower away from you. It's such a, it's really, really nice.
And
really nice.
I do think though that something with Worldbreakers that I think is like, we talked about it, it being in the vein of like lots of these sort of similar, head-to-head card battlers. But Worldbreakers does have a feel that I really like of these very small-scale battles between, like, not many combatants. You might have, like, two units or one unit on the board going up against three units. You know, it's very, very small, manageable numbers, having these very small-scale battles, and also having something that feels like a skirmish or a scrap or a push and pull. Because one thing it has that it doesn't, you know, Summoner Wars and Netrunner and all of Magic the Gathering, all these kinds of games, have I take my turn and then you take your turn. Worldbreakers has a round of four turns each, but they're staggered between the players. So it'll be me, then you, then me, then you, and it bounces back, which does give it this very similar to sort of the way that Flesh and Blood feels like a game of like call and response. Worldbreakers is that, but with multiple people rather than just one body that you're piloting like a sort of Torabash pro.
Yeah, you know, we mentioned Radlands during the Worldbreakers section of this video that we did, which was a Roxley Games production that you and I both really wanted to like. It's so beautiful. It's, again, one of these deploy units and raid the opponent's, you know, like resources.
Yes.
But set in this neon, drippy, post-apocalyptic Mad Max setting. Looked great, but relevant to what you're saying now, Tom, the problem I had, well, one of the problems I had with that game is like, I would take my turn and do a bunch of cool stuff and it felt great, but I hated when you took your turn and, you know, stomped on my units and shot my sniper and attacked my, you know, like, you know,
silos
or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. But then I got to take my turn and that was fun because I did some cool stuff. Oh no, Tom's taking his turn again. Yeah. And Worldbreakers avoids that by just being like, you play a card and I can do a action. Then you can do a action. And it's like, it's fast-paced and exciting and feels a bit more tense. Yeah, no, love it. Love that structure. Up next, I just want to talk for a hot second about Hungry Monkey, a game put out by Heidelbar as part of their line of... this is tricky to describe. Heidelbar have put out a selection of little boxed games that are unique takes on games you can play with a classic deck of cards.
Yeah.
For example, they put out Blaze, which is based on very popular Russian game Durak. And we reviewed what we think is there's Spicy, which is based on the game Cheat, which is quite good. But I think Hungry Monkey has eclipsed Spicy as the best game in this line. And maybe I might even say the only one worth probably buying.
Hold Hungry the phone. Monkey.
Oh,
they also put out Coyote.
Yeah. Oh,
Discord is cutting out a lot of noise that you're making there, but I presume it's just air.
It's a long raspberry sound made with my lips, yeah. So sorry, are you going to go to bat for Coyote now?
Well, I'd bat for it more than like, I don't know, in my Heidelbar ranking, like, would I put Coyote like above Anansi? Maybe? I don't know.
All I'm saying is that I wouldn't necessarily go out and tell people to buy Anansi or Coyote.
All right, okay, fine.
But Hungry Monkey and Spicy maybe, but Hungry Monkey most of all. Hungry Monkey is based on the card game Shithead or Palace. And here's the thing, as a game, it's tricky to teach and not particularly tactical and not like enormously clever. But what Hungry Monkey has in spades, in abundance, in a Scrooge McDuck style vault, is this thing, or this idea of flow.
Mm-hmm.
And on the next podcast, we're going to be talking about a game day that Tom and I did where we didn't review new games. We just played games that are just like classics that we thought, you know, let's just have some fun.
Yes.
So on the next podcast, you'll hear us talking about Taj Mahal, Samurai, Mundus Novus, and Parade. And what you remarked when we were playing Mundus Novus is like, the game isn't amazing, but the flow of it is.
Yes.
Like, and that's what Hungry Monkey has, right? It's just like, you're just put, like, it's such a peculiar state for a board game to have because it's almost separate to the game. Like the game is the game, the challenge, the contest is secondary just to this action of playing cards, looking at a card, drawing a card when it, and it's alchemy, but sometimes that just feels great.
Yeah. I think it can only happen in games that are on the simpler side of things because it's that feeling of like really worrying and crunching and focusing on the game and more focusing on the motions of it. It's like you're less focused on trying to do well and more just pleased by the act of playing with your friends, drawing cards, smiling at each other.
Yeah, smiling and doing like playful things. And I think the thing that Hungry Monkey and Mundus Novus have in common is that both see you working on a shared thing. Like Mundus Novus sees you passing tons of cards back and forth
right.
in this big, weird shifting market. And then with Hungry Monkey, you're all adding cards to a shared deck. So it's almost like it's like, oh, this is going to sound maybe a bit skeevy, but it's almost like the sensation of touching one another, but without actual physical touch. You're touching a shared object and amending it and tweaking it. Does that make sense? Do I sound nuts?
You know, you do sound nuts, but it does make a bit of sense.
Okay, well, I'll take that.
In the same way that, like, playing a video game together is, like, touching each other.
It's in the same way that parallel play is, even though you're doing two completely different tasks in the same room.
Yes.
It feels like you are playing together, even though you're not.
Yeah.
The human brain is weird. Let's move on before Tom has me sectioned. finally, Tom is going to help me solve a problem.
Hold on, we've got Aquarian and Voyagers first.
Oh, okay. Tom is going to help me solve a problem after he talks about Aquarian and Voyagers a bit more.
Very, very brief mention of Aquarian and Voyagers here because they are in the unfortunate category of being games that are just really solid. And that's the kind of game that is hard to talk about on a podcast. Aquarian and Voyagers are just two really lovely little roll and writes. They're both made by a company called Postmark Games, who do print and play roll and writes. They're £4 to buy them, and you get access to all future content. You print them at home because everyone has dice and pencils somewhere in their house. You don't need more dice and pencils. I have so many roll and writes now, and I like the pens or pencils in literally none of them. Just give me my own, and that will be fine. There's something lovely about the Aquarian and Voyagers. So they're these nice little roll and writes. They have these very, very simple core mechanics. Aquamarine, you are rolling two dice and making an area out of them that you're then using to dip underneath the sea. But then if you use the higher of the dice to make that area, you will have to spend air in your tank, which means that you will maybe drown as you get to the bottom. Voyages, you're a little boat sailing along the sea, and there's this lovely thematic sense of you roll three dice and you choose two of them to like choose your direction and the speed at which you're going to go. And that roll kind of like, maybe this is a little silly, but to me it feels like a sort of thematic blowing of wind across the sea, and you're just sort of catching it the right way at the right time to zoom along to your location. Both of them are just really simple, really enjoyable, and they have this really nice arc where there are multiple sheets that you get that kind of add or change mechanics as you go. So the last one in Voyages is like a boat race, and Aquamarine has these like massive sea creatures that you need to draw a huge area to capture them in. And that's
oh,
it.
Oh, fun.
That's literally all I've got to say about Aquarian and Voyages. They're just both really great, lovely, simple roll and writes.
You know, I think the people are, well, I have 2 points to make. First off, there's a weirdly high ratio of popular games that feature drowning. Because Aquamarine, great game, features drowning. Deep Sea Adventure, very popular game, features drowning. Bargain Basement's Bathysphere, lovely game, features drowning.
Yeah.
Maybe this is the secret sauce that game designers should be applying in.
Or more, it's if a game is under the sea, it should feature drowning as a point.
Yes.
You know, it must have that as a mechanic.
Yes.
There we go.
Deep Sea Endeavor is coming out next year, and if they haven't added drowning to the classic Eurogame Endeavor, then I'll be disappointed. The other thing I want to say is people are probably listening to you talk about, you know, oh, it's only £4 for these games. You print at home yourself. People at home might be thinking, I don't have a printer. But you know what? You do probably have people at home, a friend who works in an office. And the main reason that anybody works in an office is to get access to that sweet office printer where you can print off as much as you want in very glossy full color paper. So go to your friend or family member and just get them to print Aquamarine and Voyagers for you at their job. And in doing so, not only will you be getting that printing for free, you'll be slightly endangering their employment. that's just like a fun game that they can play as they're making a game that you can play.
Print 200 copies of your print and play roll and write game at your friend's office and get them into huge amounts of trouble.
Oh, I love this. I love this. It's a game within a game. Finally, Tom is going to help me at last with a problem that I've got. So in this top 10 video, one of the last games we covered and one of the best games in the video is the new Ryan Courtney game Trailblazers, which is a game where you are going to be using the Ryan Courtney signature, which are little domino pieces, and they really do resemble dominoes, I think, in shape and feel and how you use them. Except in the first Ryan Courtney game, Pipeline, these domino pieces contained pipes that you would use to refine oil. In the next Ryan Courtney game, Curious Cargo, the pipes were instead conveyor belts on these domino pieces that you would use to transport goods. But this is the third and even simpler Ryan Courtney game, Trailblazers, in which you run or are designing like camps in a kind of American national park setting.
Yes.
So you are going to be sort of like drawing paths through the wilderness for people. That, and you want these paths to loop out from like base camp so that people can go on a nice big walk on a path. And then you put a separate camp for cyclists, and then you've got cycling trails that run out from that. And then you've got a third camp for kayaking, and you are somehow carving, I guess, rivers or like little channels
yes.
that people can float down. Kind of like you're designing like It's a Small World ride at Disneyland. Trailblazers is great. You can go and watch the top 10 video to watch Tom wax lyrical about why Trailblazers is great. But Tom, I've realized that my collection needs a Ryan Courtney game. I do not need all three of these because I just don't. That like they are similar enough that I've got limited space in my collection. I don't need three games by an American man about pipes.
Right.
That's too many. So which should it be?
So
do I want the lightweight game of Trailblazers, the midweight but very cruel game of Curious Cargo, or the heavy Euro of Pipeline?
The lowdown here, I think. So Trailblazers is the simplest. It also seats the most people. The non-travel version of the game, the full box version, seats up to 8 people, which is absurd.
I am never, ever going to do that, ever. I am never, if I've got 8 people around my house, I am playing an 8-player game that is designed for big groups in mind, like Monikers or, you know, Deception, Murder in Hong Kong, or Sidereal Confluence. I don't know.
Okay, fine. Never mind. That's a moot point. But Trailblazers is the one you're most likely to get to the table because it's like 30 minutes. It's like dead simple. You can play it with most anyone. And it does still have the pipes in spades. The pipe puzzle is nasty. It is mean. It is really, really interesting in this game. It is good. But both of us do like the sort of the layer on top that is inside of Pipeline and Curious Cargo. And out of the two, I think you most like Curious Cargo.
I do, because it feels the most unique. Pipeline is the 25% of Pipeline that is pipes. God, this is such an insane sentence to say. I love board games. The 25% of Pipeline that is the pipe mechanic, I love. The 75% of it, which is like a really solid economic game, I like, but I don't know. I'm kind of talking myself around because I was going to be like, that's the kind of thing I have in my collection already. But I don't really have that in my collection already.
You don't have the sort of like very mathsy, like get to market first that Pipeline has of like, it's that sort of hard edge of economics where it's like there is a very limited supply of everything that you need to steal from someone else.
Yeah, the closest thing I have there is like, I don't know, Food Chain Magnate or The Estates or kind of Sidereal Confluence.
Maybe Container. I think the thing that is so interesting also about Pipeline as a game is it's like, I've not seen a game do the thing that it does where it has 3 rounds or 3 years. Year 1 is very, very long. Year 2 is quite short. Year 3 is like tiny, because it assumes that by year 3 you have an engine that is so ridiculous that you are doing things that are like unheard of in year 1. Like, I think the arc of that game in terms of it being like a number go up game is just so juicy. It's like doing that better than I've like ever seen in any other game, where like you build an engine that is so ruthless that you are just absolutely churning out. And it's the fact that it's not points, the fact that it's money gives it a whole different feel. Like, that is a huge thing in games. As soon as you make your points money instead, you've got a different game on your hands. And Pipeline, it's just stacks on stacks. It feels so good.
Counterpoint, Counterpoint, Curious Cargo is small.
And it's lethal.
And it's deadly, and it's so unique, and that counts for a lot. Oh, but I can't have Pipeline and Curious Cargo.
Well, because maybe this is how you justify yourself, as you say that Curious Cargo is so small that you can have Pipeline too.
But Tom, I've also got it here written down on my desk that I've realized my collection doesn't have an Azul. I need an Azul.
You need an Azul.
I think I need original Azul.
Yeah, bog Azul.
Bog standard Azul. I might have to wait, but I'm just going to wait until the new Azul comes out, because there's another one.
Here's what we do. Is you should, so there's, I got the expansion for Pipeline and I looked at it and went, oh yeah, the expansion for Pipeline, and then realized that we can probably never cover it, because covering it will be the most dry thing anyone has ever heard ever. It has, you know, like, oh, it adds like new and variable market tiles, and people will just tune out by the dozens as they listen to that part of the podcast.
Yes, correct.
However, I'm sure it's great. I'm sure it's really interesting. I'm sure it changes pipeline. And so I want to play it. So here's what we do. You come to my house and we play ourselves a bit of pipeline with the variable market tiles. And then you can decide on what pipe game gets the crown, gets the dub.
Okay. We would also, I'd need to play Curious Cargo again.
Which is fine.
Something I'm happy to do because it's a great game.
Let's play all three and go nuts.
I don't actually feel I need to play Trailblazers again, you know?
I had a really lovely time playing Trailblazers at a pub. We played it three times in a row and it was just lovely. It was just nice doing a little puzzle. Like, it had that flow. That's the thing, is it's like, because it's all pipe, it doesn't leave you exhausted afterwards. Like, even if you can make massive mistakes and have real problems in that game, it's still ultimately kind of soothing as a game, which is definitely not something you can level at either Curious Cargo or Pipeline.
No, I tell you what, honestly, if I'm being totally honest with you, myself, and the people listening to this podcast, I am both excited and ready to see Ryan Courtney, who I think we both agree is a great designer, mm-hmm. do something that doesn't have these sodding pipes in it.
Well, he did Bear Raid.
Oh, yeah, which I didn't like. Hey, if you like Shut Up and Sit Down content, if you watch our YouTube videos, if you listen to the podcast, I've got good news for you. We've now got an additional kind of content that we're making. It's called TikTok. It's a new app that I think is going to be really popular one day. don't laugh, Tom. I really think that TikTok will one day maybe be as valuable as
things Jeeves. We do, like
blogging and podcasting. Yeah. For real, Shut Up and Sit Down is on TikTok now. If you're thinking to yourself, I don't do TikTok, that's fine. You can just go to, if you Google TikTok Shut Up and Sit Down, you can go to our TikTok page and watch a bunch of small videos. Tom will have to beep this. I've done a TikTok video called Top 3 Games That Made My Brain Shit Itself. Tom has done the most unhinged 1-minute review of Newsfjord you've ever seen. And we're just getting started. There's a few more videos on there, and I have got a video explaining why Brass Birmingham is considered the greatest board game of all time coming in the next 2 weeks. Importantly, I just want to stress, this isn't taking a lot of time out of Tom and my day. This is something, TikTok videos, the stuff we film on our phone and we can make them and edit them pretty fast. So this doesn't mean you'll be getting any less Shut Up and Sit Down YouTube videos or podcasts. It's just an extra fun thing that we're doing to try and achieve Shut Up and Sit Down's mission of spreading board games to people who might not realize they are dang good.
Yes.
Because say what you want about TikTok, like, TikTok is really good at putting your videos in front of people who have not chosen to watch them. and Shut Up and Sit Down's YouTube offering, we can do a video review of a board game and it might reach some people who don't know about niche board games. But mostly now, Shut Up and Sit Down finds that we're talking about niche board games to people who like niche board games. And that's not, we would like to be doing a bit more to be telling people far and wide that this hobby is amazing. So that's why we're making TikTok content now.
Hell yeah.
Give it a watch.
Have a little ogle.
And, you know, it's only literally, you watch all of our new TikTok content in like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's really like, just start from the top.
You can guzzle it. You can absolutely chow down on our TikToks.
You can slurp down Tom and me being real dinguses about board games with some very, very pacey editing.
And actual licensed music as well.
And actual licensed, yeah. Tom put a music song on his video that was a nice song. I liked it. I listened to it. Thought it was all right.
What,
Tom, I have to go to Ohio now.
All right. Bye?
Yeah. I literally have to leave and go to Gatwick and go to Ohio. I hope I have a good time. I hope the board gamers of Greater Akron are nice to me. I hope I get to play some role-playing games. I hope
that you turn all of this experience into a listenable and good podcast.
You're always thinking about content, and I love you for it. Thank you very much for listening to the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.